Joining us now is Steve McCabe, our new technology commentator. Hello.
Good morning, Catherine.
What's sandboxing?
Sandboxing is kind of what the name suggests, really. It's a way of writing application programs for computers and for smartphones, which limits the access that those applications have to the data and the file structure and the memory that's used by other applications. It's a security system, basically.
So now I've got little sandboxes all sitting next to each other, not able to be accessed by each other, or what?
Well, that's a general idea, yeah. The idea that we're moving toward here is, let's say you and I both write separate programs for a computer system. Yours is going to have files that it's generated, mine will have files that mine has generated. And the idea is that at the moment, without sandboxing, I could write code in my program that's malicious and then reaches out, grabs hold of your files, or even your program itself, and starts to compromise those, to edit them in a less than benign way. And so the idea of sandboxing is I can only access stuff that I've written. I can't touch your stuff, and I can't do anything bad to your stuff.
Right. Now, where does it sit in the whole range of gadgets and gizmos and systems that I can use?
Well, this is the big development that's coming out at the moment. And I should stress right now, there's a bit of speculation going on here, a bit of crystal ball gazing. But what's happened is this. When Apple released the iPhone back in 2007, I believe it was, they didn't allow any third-party applications at all. A lot of uproar about that, a lot of complaints, and finally they said, okay, fair enough. We're going to allow people to develop applications for it, and they're going to be sold solely through our online app store. We will be the sole gatekeepers for what's allowed to be installed on iPhones. And we're going to require that sandboxing is part of the way that you write your applications, which means that iPhone applications can only talk to their own content. And that's been going fine for a few years. And it occurred to me at the time that Steve Jobs, being the kind of control freak that he was probably kicking himself, thinking, I wish we could have done this on the Mac, on the desktop operating system too. And turns out that...
So you're just a genius. Before Steve Jobs, you saw what he should have done.
I was thinking this is what he was thinking. I was reading the
manifest. Wish you'd thought about some other things he was thinking. You could be a very rich man.
We'll talk after the show. But I was thinking, you know, this fits into the Apple model of wanting to have absolute control. Next thing I know, they've said that and this came out back in January this year, I think it was, they said we're going to have an app store for the Mac as well, for the desktop computer. We're going to start providing a marketplace where developers can submit their applications to Apple. Apple will review them, and if they consider them to be worthy, they'll then distribute them on the developer's behalf. And this, again, was... start looking like it was going to be a good idea. It was publicity, and it was an imprimatur for app from Apple for developers. And they're now saying that they want to see sandboxing on all apps submitted for the desktop computer, the Mac App Store as well. And they're saying this is for security purposes. There's limits, possible malicious code being written. The big downside to it is that it's going to hamstring a lot of utterly benign but very, very powerful programs that do interfere with the operating system, or I should say cooperate with the operating system.
Like what?
Well, to give you an example, there's a nice one I've been using recently, a program called Song Sergeant, that took my completely messed up and very, very disorganized iTunes library and organized it for me. And what it did was it went through the iTunes library file, which is a little directory file that lists all the songs that I'm supposed to have on my computer. It went through that, matched up entries on that list to actual files, and edited that file to make sure that it actually conformed to the reality of the files on my hard disk. And so what it was doing was, it was writing to a file, it was editing a file, it was actually deleting content from a file that it hadn't created in the first place. Under sandboxing, that's going to be next to impossible. It's going to hobble the ability of programs like that to cooperate with each other.
What about the fact that your iPad's supposed to talk to your iPhone, which is hooked up to your iTunes, which is, you know, all that sort of stuff? Is sandboxing relevant to that?
It could be, except that you have to remember that intercommunication is all mediated through Apple. Yes, my iPhone and my iPad and my everything all talk to each other, but they go through the iCloud, which is an Apple-controlled complex. So as long as you're conforming to Apple's rules of behavior, you get to talk to the cloud, but you're going to talk to it on Apple's terms.
What is the solution to this problem that the solution's thrown up?
Yes, this is a wonderful way of looking at it. And for the time being, at least, there is absolutely no obligation for any developer to submit their product to the Mac App Store. You can still, and people like, for example, Microsoft and Adobe, some of the big players in this, haven't done this yet and possibly won't ever do it from choice. They're simply saying, well, go to a shop, buy a box containing a DVD and install the program yourself, or increasingly they're saying, go to our website, buy the software, download it, and we can do anything we want at that point, and it's your computer, and so can you. Now, that sounds great at that level, and as long as that remains true, we're all sorted. But there is increasingly the speculation going on that Apple are starting to put the barriers up, starting to close things down a little bit. And there is increasing speculation in the Mac rumor mill, which is absolutely huge, that the next step is going to be in future iterations of the operating system that won't be available to anybody. That 2 years from now, 3 years from now, possibly, the only way you're going to be able to install new software on your Mac is going to be by downloading it from the Mac App Store.
What is an app, by the way?
Oh, it's a loathsome little word, really, to be honest. The word comes from application, which is, you know, when I was growing up and I was first learning about computers, we called them programs. It's basically, you know, your Microsoft Word or your Internet Explorer or Adobe Photoshop, whatever it might be. It's an application, but for some reason, those four syllables are just too onerous a responsibility to have to pronounce every single time. And Steve Jobs, for all his visionary wonderfulness, has foisted this horrible little word on us and insisted on calling them apps.
Well, it's an Apple app as well, isn't it? So it's a
yes, dump, one has to wonder if there's maybe a little residence there as well.
But basically, it's anything that you can add on to what you've already got?
Pretty much, yes.
Probably by buying it from his store.
Ideally, right. If at all possible, yes. and of course, if we're being cynical about this...
Who, me?
Yeah, I know, she's perished the very thought, eh? But if we take this to its logical conclusion, if we're accepting that Apple are going to move to a you-can-only-install-stuff-from-our store approach, we have to remind ourselves that developers do get the benefit of having Apple's little seal of approval and an outstanding distribution method, but Apple are taking 30% of all sale proceeds. So it's definitely in their interest to have all sales, especially when you're thinking that, say, Photoshop is in the hundreds of dollars.
Mm.
They're wanting their 30% of that.
Flash, I know lots of people use, and what is happening? What is it being used for, and what is happening to it?
Well, Flash, again, is it's not actually an app per se. What Flash has been is what we call a plugin, which is a little bit of an extension to the functionality of an existing app. And it started off as a desktop computer thing, so that, for example, it's a website extension. So programs like Internet Explorer or Firefox or Google Chrome or Safari are going to use this as a plugin which extends their functionality, which allows them to display very, very rich animation in web pages.
How do you get your plugin? Do you just download it?
Yeah, you have to download it from Adobe, who makers of, among other things, Photoshop.
Oh, I think I've actually got it now, I think about it.
Yeah, most people do. It's pretty ubiquitous.
Carry on.
It's one of those things that oftentimes you don't even realise you've got. It's just there in the background, and you'll install it once, and then it just every time you go to a web page that has a Flash animation on it, and a lot of the time it's advertising. It's usually that sort of flashy multimedia content. A lot of video depends on it as well these days. And also most of the games on Facebook, like, for example, Farmville, are all utterly dependent on Flash. They're all basically large Flash applications.
What's happening to it?
It's going away. And I'm sure you picked up the note of optimism in my voice.
Well, no, I'm just thinking of all the Farmville addicts out there, because we know there's like gazillions of them who are going, happens to Farmville?
Yes, this will be my wife and daughter among them. But what's going to happen is that Flash has been available on the desktop computer world for years, and that is not going anywhere. Adobe has said they'll keep developing Flash for that. What's happening is that increasingly people start to realize that Flash on mobile devices doesn't really work particularly well. It's very much a technology that relies on the point and click, the mouse interface. But mobile devices rely on the fingertip touch paradigm, which most Flash applications don't really integrate very well with. Steve Jobs, whose name seems to be coming up an awful lot today, famously published an absolute rant about this last year on the Apple website, but a lot of people have been saying similar things about Flash for quite some time. It's very, very buggy, or at least a lot of the applications that are written within Flash are very buggy. They're very, very security vulnerable. And on mobile devices, which are utterly dependent on a small battery, they are very, very processor intensive, and so they drain your battery really, really fast. And so Apple refused to allow Flash to be installed on iPhones and got a lot of flack for it, but people have eventually grudgingly said, you maybe got a point there. Other mobile platforms have allowed it. It has been implemented. Never particularly brilliantly, from what we can tell. And so Adobe have finally said, look, you know what? We're just not going to develop it any further. The release that's out now, that's it.
Yeah, but we'll keep for desktop?
We'll keep it for desktops for the time being, because they're saying it's still a valid alternative. But the technology that they're now encouraging people to implement to replace Flash, which is what they call HTML5, it's an open source system. It's the latest iteration of the technology that basically powers all web pages. That is both a mobile device technology and also a desktop computer technology.
So Adobe's using open source for this?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. HTML5 is totally open source. It's an open specification, and they're actively encouraging developers to leave Flash behind on the mobile devices, move over to HTML5 on mobile, and start using that. They're even they're starting to provide tools for development of HTML5 applications. And if they start to move toward that on the mobile, we have to assume that it's going to be difficult for them to have a two-fold development strategy here. Sooner or later, this would appear to be the first nail in the coffin of Flash.
Why is the new one going to work where the old one didn't, if I can just put it as basically as that?
Very, very... Well, first of all, the new one, as we're putting it, the HTML5, does support, or I should say, it's better suited to mobile devices, it's better suited to the touch screens. It's also a technology which is completely open. The big drawback with Flash, or one of the big drawbacks, there are several, is it's a completely closed technology. Adobe make it, sell it, distribute it, and don't really give a whole lot of information about the innards of it and how it actually works. You get to use it, you get to play with it, but it's all ultimately completely controlled by Adobe. HTML5 is an open standard, and anybody who is interested in it can get hold of the standard and write code that conforms to it, and it will work anywhere. It's a much more open system, and so that's why it's going to be of benefit for people to use HTML5.
There you go. That's the ultimate in outsourcing, actually, isn't it, when you do all your product development open source and then say, OK, we'll sell that now.
Most definitely.
Yeah. The iPhone 4S, everyone thought was going to be the 5, and then it wasn't. It was the 4S, and it was a big disappointment, and then it wasn't in New Zealand anyway. Well, now it is, and you've got one.
It's in my pocket even as we speak, yes. My shiny new toy.
No comment.
I know, I'm sad like that.
Are you loving your iPhone 4S?
Well, it's fun. It really is. My old one was starting to show signs of age. It was time to update, and I went and got it. And, you know, it's pretty good. Obviously, people were looking for the iPhone 5, which was going to have all these incredible new features. No one was quite sure what they were going to be, but it was going to have them anyway. And when it didn't have these non-specific new features, there was massive, you know, wailing and gnashing of teeth and rending of garments. But it's on sale now, and it's pretty damn good, to be fair.
What's the new stuff? Because that's what it's all about, after all, isn't it? Give us some new stuff.
Oh,
what's the new stuff that it does?
Well, there's a couple of nice new things. The chip that powers it, the processor, is very fast. Everything's very slick and very smooth. The camera is very, very high quality. But the big marquee feature, the big centerpiece of it, is a technology that Apple are calling Siri. And this is the voice recognition software.
This is the personal assistant thing you can tell to do your washing or whatever. These voice recognition things can go horribly, 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 horribly wrong, can't they?
Well, they have the potential to, yes. And you know, the funny thing is, when you buy this thing in New Zealand and get it out of the box, it's got three different varieties of English that you can specify. It's got US, UK, and Australian.
But not ours.
No, but interestingly, out of the box in New Zealand, it's specified to default to UK.
Oh, that's funny. I'm sure someone, I can't remember who, was blogging about this and saying that they'd just spoken an American accent because it was the only way to get the damn thing to get it right.
Well, I've actually been playing with this, you know, in the purposes of research for our show today. I've actually been doing some actual research on this. And it likes my Coronation Street vowels.
I was going to say, since when has the UK had one accent?
Absolutely. Well, the one standard UK accent apparently I have now. It's the first time I ever realised that. But, you know, I'm from up north in Manchester, and it understands the vast majority of what I say to it.
So if you say, hey, up, Chuck, go and get me some takeaways.
It's not quite that good yet, but it's getting there. But what is nice is I've put this thing in front of Kiwis, who do great with it. I was even over at some Dutch friends on Saturday night, and they had a play with it. And they speak superb English, but they have definite Dutch accents, and Siri was cool with it. So I was quite impressed on that level. So the deal is, it can understand what you say, but it can't always do very much with it. And here, this is where it kind of breaks down a little bit, unfortunately. When Apple was showing this thing off, they said, you know, find me an Italian restaurant nearby, and it'll go searching off. It'll say there's a fantastic pizza place down the road. And that's great, except for the fact that it uses a database called Yelp to find those things. And unfortunately, Yelp includes businesses in the US, in the UK, and Europe, and that's about it. And you'll notice one rather important country missing from that list.
Uh-huh.
And so as a result, anytime you, even if you ask it, you know, find me anything, it'll simply come back with a message saying, I'm sorry, I can only do this when you're in the US using US English, which reduces its functionality quite drastically, unfortunately.
There you go.
Yes.
Well, perhaps the iPhone 4Z, the iPhone 5A, 5B, 5D will improve that for you.
Who knows?
I'm not being sarcastic.
Good Lord, no.
I know you love these things. Good talking to you. Steve McCabe, technology commentator.